Welcome to the Gleeman's Apprentice, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I am his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
Travel in the wastelands in search of every story. The Gleeman's goes to find tales of bravery and glory. Pass along achievements accomplished by mighty folks. The telling of the wheel made up by different spokes. He comes across a long last singing whose clothes are tattered and worn. Invited her on his journey.
As Mandy Cat has already read the first four books of the series, there are always potential spoilers up through The Shadow Rising.
And after that, I'll be reading the rest of the books for the very first time with my Gleeman, Twitch.
Welcome back to the Gleeman's Apprentice. I, of course, am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I'm his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
And today we are covering two chapters, because one of them is really short, and they go really well together.
Yes, they do.
So we are covering chapters 54, Into the Palace, and chapter 55, Into the Deep. But before we hit that, Mandy, how is your week?
It was good. So today is El Día de los Muertos.
Yes, it is.
Not that I actually took down all of my Halloween decorations yesterday morning because it was Sunday. And I was like, I will have no time this week and I don't want them hanging around for a week after Halloween. So literally Sunday morning of Halloween, I took all of my decorations down.
Did you guys have any trick-or-treaters?
No, because I think because I took all the decorations out. We're on a busy road, but I dressed up Merle like a pumpkin, and we took a walk while other kids were trick-or-treating.
Nice.
And they enjoyed it, but he actually, I can tell he doesn't like it when people are in masks, like Halloween masks. He does not like it. He can't tell what they are.
Yeah.
I noticed that last year as well. He didn't bark at anyone, but I was keeping him pretty close because I was like, cute costume, but you're freaking out my dog because he can't see your eyes.
Yep. He doesn't. Yeah. No, I get that.
Kids liked him. Yeah, that was kind of cute.
Awesome.
You guys stay busy with Halloween?
Yes. We got 3 bags of candy and a bag of chips. And like one of those like family size bags. Yeah. And mini bags of chips. And we were out of candy by like 5. Dylan ran to the store, got 3 more bags of candy. We were out again. Dylan took Lincoln and Kendrick and a couple of Lincoln's friends trick-or-treating.
And then gave out their candy?
And when they got back, we fed them. I made them Sloppy Joes and hot chocolate. And then they went back out. Kendrick chose to stay. Kendrick doesn't like chocolate. So Kendrick picked out 4 pieces of candy that they had gotten and dumped the rest of their candy into our giveaway basket so that we could keep giving out candies.
Funny.
And then she allowed me to watch the football game because it was the New Orleans Saints, who I'm a big fan of.
Oh.
While they handed out candy.
That's adorable.
I was just like, you are the most amazing 7-year-old I've ever met. They were just fucking crazy. Just
nice.
So giving, so kind, so.
Good. Yeah. I watched a scary movie and wrote thank you notes to all the baby shower presents.
Nice.
So, you know, you got that.
That's important.
You know you're an adult when that's your Halloween.
What scary movie did you watch?
Oh, it wasn't really good. Hypnotic.
What?
No, I take that back. I switched it. I still want to watch that one. Just your classic, you know, someone says, this is wrong, this is bad, this is evil, fights it, gets rid of the bad guy, and then they convince that person, well, why don't you take his place? And they do. That type of movie.
Wait, so what movie was it?
No, I literally don't remember the title.
Okay.
I couldn't even tell you what writer it was on. It was just, I kind of hate those ones where I'm like,
yeah,
oh, you're just going to be a bad guy. That's such an 80s twist. I'm over it.
All right. Okay, well.
So with that being said, let's go into
let's get
Robert
into
Jordan's Halloween.
Okay, Into the Palace is probably my favorite chapter of this entire book.
It's intense, and it's probably, you know, I've been saying Elena Nynaeve stuff has been stepping up its game. This is the official Robert Jordan does his thing, and you're finally excited for them.
The first half of it is a little on the slow side because we're catching up. We're setting the stage. But the second half of it is just amazing. So anyways, let's jump into your cat notes. Right. Let's go.
Chapter 54, Into the Palace. We're in Elaine's perspective. She's in a cart being trotted through the crowded streets of Tenchico. And she's really unhappy with every bump. But next to her are Nynaeve and Eganine. They're also in the cart. Neither appear distressed, for the record. Just our little princess here.
Yep.
So all of them are dressed in plain wool and servant clothing. So now we're getting into... We didn't get to learn in a previous chapter what their Elaine's big plan was to go unseen. So now we're going to learn. Because this makes you... We'll learn why, but Eganine is happy to be in plain clothing, I think.
Yes.
Anyway, it helps them blend in. So outside the cart, Domon is walking with 20 guards, insisting, yeah, that's the norm. And it is deterring folks from attempting to grab at the baskets that sit on the outside of the cart.
Yep. So they're posing as outlying merchants who are, like, down on their luck. Right?
Down on their luck, but they're still in a cart. I don't know.
No.
Yeah. I guess our merchants live a better life than that. Is that what you're saying? I wouldn't know.
Yeah,
probably. Compared to the rest of Tenchico, I'm like, if you have a cart, you must be pretty decent. Elaine is recalling how they did end up plotting together back at the inn. Did you want to read a bit on Domon's plan and plotting?
Yes. So all of the men were... like trying to put forth reasons why the two women could not go into the palace by themselves, and all of their reasons were ridiculous until Domon pops in with, "You can no go into the palace alone. You say you will no channel unless you must no to warn these black Aes Sedai. Then you must have muscle to swing a club if the need do arise, and eyes to watch your back will no be amiss either. I am known there to the servants. I did take gifts to the old Panarch too. I will go with you. You do make me stretch my neck on the headsman's block because I did leave you at Fulham. Fortune prick me if you do not, if you do know. Well, I do be done now. You can no object to this. I will go in with you." And then, of course, Julian's like, "You're a fool, Eleanor. You think the Terrabonners will allow you to wander about the palace as you wish? A scruffy smuggler from Ilion? I know the ways of servant and how to duck my head and make some empty-headed noble think." He cleared his throat hastily, looking at Nynaeve. Or maybe Elaine herself. I should be the one to go with them. And then, of course, Tom's like, "Do you think either of you could pass for a Terrabonner? I can with these awesome mustaches I have. Besides, you cannot run around the Panarch's palace carrying cudgel or staff. A more subtle method of protection is needed." And this is, of course, where Tom flourishes his hands to all of a sudden have a knife that wasn't there.
Yeah, previously. I did find Tom the most convincing of all their arguments, simply because I like him, probably. I'm not saying Domon's wrong. Clearly, they're following Domon's plans, by the way. But Nynaeve does, in that moment, insist, "Only women can be inside the palace unnoticed."
Yep.
And then Eganine had volunteered, insisting... she joined because justice to the dark friends, right? So she's still staying true to some Sianch and stuff.
Yes. She definitely doesn't like dark friends.
And this is my favorite moment. Domon gives approval that he'd only wager on two or three of his own men versus Eganine.
Coin for coin. there be two or three men of all my sailors that I would wager against Aegina.
That's just
coin
funny.
For coin.
All right.
He's impressed.
He is?
He's impressed with her.
He's not going to lie. And she did kick his ass once upon a time.
Yep. No, he thinks she's pretty cool.
So back to the present, there's a big bump, and it brings Elaine awake to the present again. All the women are now frazzled, all of them. But the cart is actually slowing to a stop, and it's because there's white cloaks outside, right? And it's a guy with ranking ribbons, so yep. None other than Hakeem Carradine. Our guy who's kind of in cahoots with Black Aja, who's kind of in cahoots with the Dark One, right? He's got like a couple stories going.
He's a white cloak, but he's also a dark friend. Remember?
Yeah, and then
we found out at this point that he is the man
named Bors.
That calls himself Bors, yes.
And then Leandrin got under his skin.
Yes.
Or whatever. Anyway.
But anyways.
Eganine mutters that the man looks worried. That's interesting. Was she referring to Carradine, I think? Anyway, behind them in the streets, they hear a shout claiming the Panarch is dead. And at last, they manage to get to the Panarch Palace, although are again stopped with questions again. Only this time, Elaine believes, I did see money pass from Domon to the guards.
Yep.
And quickly, and they enter the gates.
This time, it wasn't the White Cloaks. It was
guards.
It was the Panarch's Legion.
Yep. So they do enter the gates, and lo and behold, what are in all those baskets but the white peppers that Domon famously smuggles and deals, and supposedly Lady Amathera is rumored she loves to eat.
Yep. Exactly. And then, Domon relays to the women that Lieutenant did say the Legion could protect the Panarch themselves if most of the Legion had not been sent to the Ring Forts. Jacob Carradine do have access to the Panarch, but no, the Lord Captain of the Legion, and they are no pleased that all the guards inside do be civil watch. A suspicious man might say some do want the Panarch's guard to watch each other more than anyone else. Well, that seems suspicious.
All of it seems suspicious at this point. But here's where the plan takes place. The women take one basket of ice peppers each into the kitchens.
Yes.
And they immediately... Oh, Elaine sweats buckets because there's a slim woman, not of kitchen staff, but absently petting a kitty, drinking cream out of a bowl. None other than former Brown Turned Black, Marilyn Gemmelfin.
Yep. Marilyn Gemmelfin.
So, but they oddly easily find a storage door. I'm sure Domon told them, but they find a storage door and shut it behind them. And then Elaine's freaking out about Marilyn, but in the meantime, Nynaeve and Eganine have dumped out their ice peppers because underneath, servant clothing of the palace. And they're getting changed, and basically I think it's Nynaeve, but hold your concern until you can do something about it.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, for real. And also shut up because we don't want Marilyn coming in to see what this ruckus is about in a storage room.
Exactly.
And then Elaine kind of complies with some grumbling, but it's just, Elaine's really anxious.
That's what's going on. No, she's getting nervous. She keeps telling herself, be brave, be brave. She keeps thinking about all the past Queens of Andor.
Yeah, that'll come up.
Okay.
But they finish appropriately. They put plain clothes back in the basket, dump the white peppers back on them so it doesn't look immediately horrible. But when they go outside, thankfully no Marilyn, even though the cat's still lapping cream, and an undercook, I love this, is just like, that's not fair. I just wanted some cream for my berries, but now I'm the one being punished, and the cat enjoys the spoils. And of course, it's like, I don't know exactly who this is. I just said mistress of kitchen.
Yeah, the head cook, probably, something like that.
You know, at least you're alive, but spies Elaine and is just like, you need to bring food for Lady Ispan, right?
She's just like telling. What are you lazy louts doing just wandering around? Take this food to Lady Ispan. She will be angry if it's not there when she wakes up.
But Elaine doesn't know how to respond, so she just thinks of Andorian custom and gives a little curtsy.
She thinks of how the servants respond to her. And they curtsy.
Oh, that dumbass.
Yeah. So she curtsies to the head cook.
Instead of saying, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Servants don't curtsy to other servants.
It was probably she just needed to nod and grab the tray.
Exactly. And that's why. The head cook says, so you mock me, do you? You little cow, you. And starts around the table with her wooden spoon waving threateningly, and Elaine, Nynaeve, and Aegeon just book it.
Run away. Good idea,
Lily. Run away, run away!
So it works, though. They're not actually chased by this head cook. But in the hall, they manage to pause by a storeroom. I think this is great. Again, they pick up supplies to enhance their costumes, right? Props. So
yes, yes.
Nynaeve has a duster. Aegeon has an armful of towels. But also a stout stone pestle is tucked inside. It's fabulous.
A cudgel is sometimes handy, especially when no one expects you to have it.
She's a genius, isn't she?
Oh, I love Aegeon. I'm glad that you are finally on the Aegeon.
It took a while.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so they do a really quick chat before they split up. Basically, Nynaeve, warning, do not enter the Pan Arch's room if there are any guards at the door. And at that moment, a ton of guards run past. And now we learn the rumors Tom and friends were spreading about the Pan Arch being dead are obviously spreading about and causing chaos in the already chaotic streets. I was confused the first time I read the Pan Arch was dead. I was like, oh my gosh, they really did it. They killed her. And then the scene kept going.
Yep. No, no, no. So basically the plan was Tom, Julin, and then all of Doman's men.
Yeah.
Remember, Doman has, I think, like 6 trading vessels at this point in Tennessee. He's doing good. He's doing well.
Great.
And all of his sailors from all of his 6 ships are running around the city spreading this rumor to draw the guards out of the Panarch's palace so that they can do what they need to do.
So, side note, with nothing to do with this chapter, do you think they do that because he asked them to? Do you think they do that because he started the rumor and they believe it true? You can't trust all your sailors. I mean, look at that one dick.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Because it implies he trusts them. Like he pays them to spread lies, is how I feel. But then I'm like, what about the gelbs in the world that are
dead? So I would assume that not all the sailors know the actual plan. If any of them do, it's probably like his top captains.
That's true. He could be
And then they're just spreading the rumors.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a marketing technique.
Yeah. It's really just spreading the word of mouth. Especially, I mean, this was before the internet, at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, and definitely before, you know, Snapchat or Twitter was a thing. That's so,
Hashtag Panarch dead.
The quickest way to get information from one end of a city to the next, it's not through dial-up, it's through word of mouth.
All right, so that aside, Nynaeve refuses any Cianchen help, because I think Aegeon is basically like, really, you could use an extra helper, and Elaine's like, really, you could?
Yeah.
But nope, Nynaeve is off to go search for the male Adam, and then Aegeon and Elaine go together with memorized instructions as to where Lady Amethera is being held.
Yep.
Elaine hears the body singing and recollects Nynaeve saying something about a song.
Yep.
But she also feels the power of an Aes Sedai within. So she realizes, yep, this is it. She has a quick moment of, well, people are going to notice my power then. No, they won't be able to differentiate from whoever's already in the room.
Exactly. She's like, there's somebody already using the power in there, so I can just use the power. But I just really quick wanted to sing a little bit of the song.
Okay.
If you don't mind. My breasts are round, my hips are too. I can flatten a whole ship's crew. My thighs are strong as anchor chain. My kiss can... And then right when she says burst, she notices Elaine bursting into the room.
Yeah, and this is good, though. Elaine preps Aegeon, like, hopefully there's just one, but if there's more, you know, just open, you open the door, duck, so I can see what I got to deal. So Aegeon opens the door, ducks. This is where Elaine was also, before she opened the door, she's pumping herself up by all the bravery
of previous queens
of Andor, and realizes all of them were brave.
Yeah, she's going through the list of... Yep.
I will be a brave queen one day, too. We hope.
Unless she dies right now.
Or if your brother's a dick and takes over the throne. I don't know. So, Gawain? Yes.
Gawain be a dick?
He...
I'm kidding.
get me on Godwin right now.
Do you ever want to get on Godwin? Ever?
No.
Okay.
No, he's a loser.
Just checking.
He's kind of the, no, I won't finish that thought. Okay, Eganine opens the door and ducks. Elaine uses air to bind any sister within. Thankfully, it's just Tamael, who's still lazily sitting on the front, on the couch in front of naked and uncomfortable Lady Anna Farrah, obviously bound by air. So Tamael is instantly knocked out, literally knocked out by air and unconscious.
Yeah, she's just, floor. Like, Tamael stands up, but Elaine just attacks and just shields her and binds her and basically knocks her out with the force of her shield.
Which then breaks Lady Amathera's bonds, and she begins whining about being forced to say words and do unjust things under the power of the Aes Sedai, which does really suck, and it confirms, like, they were using her.
No, no, what they were doing, like, so... They made me sit on my throne and speak the words they put into my mouth. It amused them to make me sometimes give justice and sometimes pronouncements of horrible injustice, rulings that will cause strife for generations if I cannot put them all right. But her, her they set to watch over me. She hurts me for no reason except to make me weep. She made me eat an entire trayful of white ice peppers and would not let me drink a drop until I begged on my knees while she laughed. Yeah, so like that's the where the ice, the
ice peppers.
That's where the ice peppers come in.
Oh, it's awful.
In my dream, she hoists me to the top of the Tower of Mourning by my ankles and lets me fall. A dream, but it seems real. And each time she lets me fall screaming just a little nearer to the ground, and she laughs. She makes me learn lewd dances and filthy songs, and laughs when she tells me that before they leave, she will make me sing and dance to entertain the... With a shriek, like a pouncing cat, she threw herself across the bench onto the bound woman, slapping wildly, pummeling her with her fists.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
I don't blame her. I don't blame her.
No.
Like, that's shit. That's, like, that was horrible
like
treatment.
Like I said, it felt like a rape scene.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing was, she's...
No,
like,
it's...
That's disgusting.
Nothing that's happening to her right now is consensual.
No.
Nothing is okay. It's very much rape of wills and rape of your, like, self... what's the word I'm looking for? Your ability to control your own life.
Yeah. But Elaine tells her, no, we're not going to beat on her right now. But so Elaine has to use air to stop. Eganine's all about beat her up. But
yeah.
Elaine uses air to stop Amathera from beating Tamael, and is just self-impressed. Ooh, I'm getting better from Joran's teachings. I thought that was funny, too.
Yeah. No, like, she got stronger. Like, by working with the weather like that, she got stronger.
So having cross-training with other cultures, good things. All right, so anyway, Elaine keeps her cool and says she's the one who's come to save Amathera and demands Amathera come with them. No pass and go or attempting to talk to her own soldiers, which is what Amathera wants to do. And at the same time, Elaine is fretting, well, how do I remove Tamael from the room as well? But basically what happens... Oh, Amathera is still being kind of a dick to Elaine. Like, oh, you can't harm me. Because your Aes Sedai. And so Elaine uses air to mess with Amathera's braids, kind of like forcing her to move a little bit. Well,
she grabs the braids and pulls them up.
Just with air.
Just with air. But like just basically to the point where she's on her tiptoe, where Amathera's on her tiptoe.
Okay. And then there's a final threat. I will bind and gag you and leave you with Tamael if you don't just go with this. And Amathera just pouty face, tan cheek, and little like, fine.
Yeah.
And I just thought, way to find your balls, Elaine. Everyone's finding their balls today.
There you go.
Gotta love it.
Everyone's finding their balls.
So. I mean, we glimpsed, there's a lot to that scene, but it was, I think we caught the soul of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no. We got it all. We got what we needed to get. I mean, there's so much, like, information dumps all over the place, right? But yeah, so let's just keep going.
Yeah, we get a switch in perspective, so it only gets more exciting.
This is the best part of this chapter. And this part is why this is my favorite chapter of the book.
Holy cow, are you guys ready for Nynaeve's perspective?
I have to say real fast, the first time through, I was not a huge fan of Nynaeve. She always seemed like a bossy older sister, And with the experiences that I had with my older sisters, I resented that. And this is the exact chapter where my opinion on Nynaeve started to switch, and I started being, like, I started seeing her in a different light, even though she might continue to act like the bossy older sister. This is where I started really paying attention to the growth that she goes through. And she's already gone through a lot of growth. I just hadn't noticed it because I resented her. This was the chapter that made me realize the growth that she has already come to at this point.
And I've loved story. Her since Lan loved her. Since Okay.
You had me since Lan.
Yeah. Nynaeve comes upon... it's really... I might have confused some of these. You'll have to catch me if I did. But I think she goes into the hall to find the Adam of pain and sorrow.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Because... And she can sense anger.
So her two goals. Let's talk about what her two goals are right now. She wants to get whatever that, like, collar and two bracelets thing is that she saw, that she's pretty sure is what the Black Aja wants. And she needs to get... Do you remember what the other thing is she needs to get?
The thing that will... Wait. She needs to get... Oh, Quendalar.
The Dark One's seal. There's a seal to the prison. There's a seal to the Dark One's prison there.
And it's still full.
So she needs to get that band, like those three bands that are supposed to be able to control men who can channel.
Okay.
And, or at least do something to Rand, right? And that Quindler disc, which all is right. A Dark One seal. So let's go.
Alright, so if I understood it correctly, she sees the Adam of pain and sorrow, but then at the same time she's managing her own emotions of anger because of these conflicted thoughts about Egonine.
She's working herself up.
She is, because then she can hold Sidar anger.
She knows she can only channel when she's
angry.
And
this is another, I think I wanted you to just read some of this section. So the bottom looks like bottom 905 to top of 906, or is it 904 to top of it?
Running the feathers over the collar and bracelets, the serving woman started down the path. Sorry. The serving woman started down the pale floor stones. She would go in a moment, and Nynaeve could... What? Slip the things into her belt pouch and take them? But the serving woman would go? Why did I think she'll leave instead of staying to work? She glanced sideways up the room at the woman coming toward her. Of course, no broom or mop, no feather duster, not even a rag. Whatever she's here for, it cannot take law. Suddenly she saw the woman's face clearly, sturdily handsome, framed by dark braids, smiling in an almost friendly fashion, but not really paying her any mind, certainly not threatening in any way. Not quite the same face, but she knew it. Before thought, she struck out, weaving a hammer-hard flow of air to smash that face. In an instant, the glow of Sidar surrounded the other woman. Her features changed, somehow more regal now, prouder. Mogideon's face remembered and startled as well, surprised that she had not approached unsuspected, and Nynaeve's flow was sliced razor clean. She staggered under the whiplash recoil like a physical blow, and the Forsaken struck with a complex weave of spirit streaked by water and air. Nynaeve had no idea what it was meant to do. Frantically, she tried to cut it as she had seen the other woman do. With a keen edged weave of spirit for a heartbeat, she felt love, devotion, worship for the magnificent woman who would deign to allow her to. The weave parted, and Mogideon missed a step. Do you want me to keep going?
No, I mean, basically what's happening for the next few pages is an intense Mortal Kombat scene between Nynaeve and Mogideon.
But I love how he sets it up. That
it just,
like,
slides
it,
in.
You get into her POV and you're with her for less than a page, and she just kind of mentions this serving girl entering the room, and all of a sudden you're in this battle,
like,
of
immediate
and she says throughout this, if another person who couldn't channel Sidine or Sidar came in,
they'd just see two people staring at each other.
They would just see two women staring at each other from, like, 10 feet apart. But, like, they're sweating, and this whole time, I just want to make sure we emphasize this. This whole time, 98 is like, I am throwing everything that I can at Mokadian. What's going to happen when she decides to throw everything she has against me?
Yeah.
Right? So.
It's very powerful. We could read that stuff all day because there's a lot to it. But I think I wanted to summarize some of it. At one point, Mokadian starts talking and kind of gives perspective of the actual Adam, saying, you know, it may control the male channeler, but he will still go mad. And at the end, the woman holding the bracelet will be fighting him the entire time he's chained as well.
Yeah.
And you could have two women holding each bracelet, because there's two bracelets, right? But same thing. Oh, and there's mention of Ravine and his queen. Ha ha, that's Lord Gabriel.
That's what, okay. Mentioned his that's name what you once. Think, huh? All right.
And then Nynaeve is realizing, okay, she's talking to me. I'm not going to give in to this. And at this point, she's putting into perspective, wait, Mokadian is struggling against me? A Forsaken?
Yeah, she starts
struggling thinking. Against me. Like, she starts to recognize, like, I'm giving my all, but she is too.
Well,
actually.
she starts wondering, why the hell isn't this woman, like, just finishing me off? Yeah. Why is she doing this bad guy info dump, like bad guys always do in stories, right?
Because we need to know as readers what's going on.
Well, we need that, but also she's trying to wear Nynaeve down at this point because she Nynaeve's at her capacity. Mokadian is also at her capacity. Exactly. She doesn't want Nynaeve to know that, but she is having a hard time. So this Forsaken woman from the Age of Legends, Nynaeve is equal to.
Yeah, it's great. Nynaeve is.
It's fucking.
But
Mokadian awesome.
Too. You're a wealth of power. You're just trained wrong.
Yeah.
So we still don't know if Nynaeve will ever actually.
Well, okay. Let's keep going.
Use it within control. Okay. Nynaeve realizes, I'm gonna weaken soon. She quits listening to Mokadian's ramblings, recognizing, oh, it's a distraction technique. Mokadian does mention something about the stories of Ages of Legend are not quite up to par with what they could really do, which I think is an important airdrop for the future. Like,
yeah,
we've only heard rumors, basically, of the truth of how powerful Forsaken were and so on and so forth. Anyway,
yeah.
This is when Nynaeve totally quits listening, instead pretending to weaken onto one knee.
Yeah.
Then grasping the Adam despite the intense emotions it feels and hurling it at Mokadian, which is buys her just enough time for Nynaeve to fully bind Mokadian with air.
She's She distracts her just enough. Mokadian lifts up and she fucking slams that shield into place. Nynaeve beats the Forsaken. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, sorry, she I'm didn't really actually sever her from the Force,
but she bound her. She blocked her. She blocked her ability. She didn't bind her. She blocked her ability to. She shielded her from the true source. So Mokadian starts to run away.
Yeah, but the scene's not done, guys. Nynaeve stuffs the bracelet into her pouch, which, by the way, how big is your damn pouch? And has a moment to reflect. She was ready to torture Mokadian and felt no different than that of Eganeen, kind of having this moment of, oh, that's how it feels when you really are passionate, like you're a bad person.
Yeah.
All right. Nynaeve approaches where the Quendalr was hidden in Teleron Riad, only to realize it's not with the figurines. But she sees an unusual pig-like figurine and squints. And realizes she's looking at an illusion of air and fire.
Somebody put, yep.
And underneath
over it, yep.
is the actual Quendalr. So I think she can just use a little bit of power, flick it away.
Yep.
It's been hidden in plain sight by Mokadian, which is still weird to me. And the Black Sisters had no idea, which is a little unusual. You'd think a pop of power right there, you'd sense it. But maybe there's too much power in the castle. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if the seals put off anything that a normal Aes Sedai would feel.
Well, just the illusion of air and fire. That was my
question. Well, okay.
Anyway, right. Nynaeve stuffs the Quendalr into her pouch as well, does know it's getting a bit heavy. Then she stares at Mokadian, who is still frozen in air, wishing for a way to take her with, but turning back to the doorway, only to realize Jean Kate is waiting with that long rod that shoots balefire and shoots at Nynaeve.
The long rod that shoots balefire.
And Nynaeve manages to jump to the side knowing exactly what it was, and the spot Nynaeve had just been standing is now destroyed. So, we have the second Mortal Kombat scene. You just fought your first villain, and the next one comes out. This is so unfair.
It's crazy.
And she recollects, like, this special rod, part of the instructions was it's almost impossible to control.
It produces balefire, and it's impossible to control.
And so it's a scene, like a gunfight, where only one person has a gun. So Nynaeve just keeps jumping and ducking out of the way.
Yep.
Megiddian's frozen, but missing any of the act. So it's not...
She's off to the side. Yeah.
Yeah, and the freaking exhibition room is just crumbling because the balefire is doing damage all around. And then suddenly Jean Kate is just gone, right? I mean, the balefire stops. And so Nynaeve doesn't wait to find out where she went.
Yeah.
She looks back to Megiddian, who is nowhere to be seen. Unusual, but again, Nynaeve wants out of there, rushes to go find Elaine, hoping no trouble came to her. Except Mandy Cat says, "You just saw something that was hidden by Megiddian by Aaron Fire. Did you double check that she wasn't in plain sight and you didn't squint special at the air where she might have been lying, waiting?"
Well, but she not only was she bound by air, but she was shielded. And Nynaeve had tied both of those off.
Yeah.
So she couldn't have used the power to...
I don't know.
Well, she was shielded from the power.
Yeah.
That's what Nynaeve had done in the first place. Then she started to run off. Then Nynaeve found her in air. And then Jean Cade came in with the magical spurting dildo and fucked everything up. And then Mokidian is just gone. So I don't know if Mokidian... I always assumed that she was able to, like, break... like somehow like break the block and then just book the fuck out.
Which also sounds like Megiddian. She wouldn't stay for Balefire.
Yeah.
But then there's also, we really don't know what happened to Jean Cage. Was she obliterated or did she just knock herself out? You know, Nynaeve at first glance didn't see her, but also didn't really look. So
I think there's also the possibility that maybe she just figured she had taken care of what she needed to take care of, grabbed Mokidian and got out of there.
Or Megiddian got out and did some shit to Jean Cade because she's pissed.
Maybe. Who knows? Okay.
It's just a mystery, but that's how the chapter ends, correct? Yeah. It's just Nynaeve suddenly, "Oh, I gotta go meet Elaine. I hope she's okay."
Yep.
"You just had two Mortal Kombat fights, Nynaeve."
Yeah.
"Are you okay?"
Yeah. Yeah.
And she got both the Adam and Quendalar.
She got what she needed. Her mission was a success. It was a messy success.
100% success.
It was messy? Successy? Messy success? No, that's starting to sound like masochism. But, well, I mean, with a big Tarangriel that produces balefire.
So.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this is the convenient, of course, the second bad guy doesn't shoot you until you see... and you can jump out of the way.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Jean Kay didn't know what she was doing, let's be honest.
Yep. No, but that's why this is probably my favorite chapter in this entire book. It's so good. Nynaeve faces the Forsaken and holds her fucking own. And this, like I said, this is when, in my first read, I became a Nynaeve fan. I was like, fuck yeah,
for good reason.
You're awesome. And
Elaine did good too. She was super anxious at the beginning, but once she got to Lady Emethera, she was just suddenly like,
yeah,
no more bullshit.
No more bullshit. We're going. She cut it out.
Don't be an asshat to me.
All right. Sweet.
So then
now we'll just move right into chapter 35, Into the Deep.
55.
I said 55. Chapter 55, Into the Deep. Okay.
So, Nynaeve's perspective. Nynaeve is running through a throng of servants, freaking out about the random explosions they'd heard, right? Because we got to think the servants had no idea that there was just this intense Mortal Kombat scene.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Nynaeve and Megiddian. So So they're all running every which direction.
Yeah, basically, like, while Nynaeve and Mokedion were facing off to each other, they're, like...
Well, it wasn't them. It was the fire stick.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, and that's when everything started going to hell. And,
yeah.
And okay. Basically, so, Jan Cade was, like, ruining everything, you know, destroying everything.
So that's how we start. Nynaeve is just running through a throng of servants. One point, she even sees Liandrin, but takes comfort because Nynaeve is no longer even has ability to hold on to any more Sidar.
She just put her head down. Yep. She's in her servant's garb. Of course, Liandrin wouldn't notice the servant, right?
No unwanted attention from Black Aja. So she does come to a meeting place. That's what we discover she's running to. Elaine and Eganine and Amathera are all there. Amathera in disguise of a silk but plain white dress. So...
Yes. Like her plain white dress will pass as a serving, as a servant's garb, as long as nobody looks
too close. Small dialogue that Elaine had needed to convince Amathera to behave after trying to run off to convince her legion to listen to
her. There was a little bit of trouble.
So Amathera's a bit of a dick.
Well, I mean, she's proud. But she's proud. Well, I mean, we get that what she's trying to do is. She wants to rally her troops. She doesn't want to depend on the White Cloaks. She doesn't want to plan on King Andric's soldiers.
That was interesting. She made a comment somewhere.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
So Elaine shares she had to restrain Eganine from going to help Nynaeve when Nynaeve did not come to the meeting place on time.
Yep.
And Nynaeve gives a simple thank you, but it's like an apologetic scene.
I mean, she's a little... She's been having all these negative feelings towards Eganine and really trying to, like, get herself to hate her because she liked her. And now that she knows that she's Sionis and she wants to hate her, she's trying to hate her. And Eganine keeps doing it's the same thing that we talked about earlier a couple episodes ago about how Elaine was really uncomfortable with liking her because of her background, but... She couldn't help it because she's just such a badass. Eganine is just such a badass. Yeah. So
that's a sweet scene. But Nynaeve explains, you know, I ran into Mogedion. We had this really intense Sidar fight between the two of us.
Yep.
And I did catch her, but she somehow disappeared and got away. So, but then there's this incredible, you never thought you'd see the moment, but Nynaeve gives a sincere apology for nearly sabotaging their mission.
Yep.
Again, having reflections, comparing to herself to Eganine.
Exactly. She's like, Elaine, I know what I said about being careful, but once I had her in my hands, it seemed all I could do of was bringing her to trial. All I could think of was bringing her to trial. I endangered everything because I didn't keep my mind on what we were about. But please don't scold me.
Yeah.
So she's sincerely regretful that because she realizes what she did was hypocrisy, you know, compared to what she said.
Yeah, and I also at this moment, I'm like, man, Nynaeve and her reflections about Eganine, they keep happening throughout the chapter, but I'm just like... It's like a crush thing almost, but it's a friend crush.
Yeah.
But it's a crush.
Yeah. You're
you know
what impressed I'm with somebody, right?
Yeah. Okay. They continue waiting, though, for the gentleman at the meeting place, and they hear what sounds like more rioting outside, and at last, Julin opens a door. I think he had to unlock it from the outside, too, or something weird. But anyway... Julin's outside, there's sailors acting as guards and like twice as much as they'd expect. And all the women leave once Tom calls them, get a move on it, right?
Yep.
He's like, quit gawking. Let's go. So they walk through the crowded streets to the inn. At one point, Nynaeve catching Eganine from stumbling. And Eganine appears grateful. And there's this other stressed point of the possibility of friendship between the two. So I'm guessing foreshadowing to who knows what's to come.
Okay.
More or less... With the more or less traitor Cianchen, right? Because technically Eganine is being a traitor to her people by not reporting.
Oh, yes, very much so. Like the fact that she let Bethamon go.
Yeah, that was
stuff. And Nynaeve even thinks to herself, that's actually more justice than I probably would have given her.
Yeah.
You know, because this is a woman who held the Adam, you know, the bracelet of the Adam and forced women who could channel to commit atrocious acts, to kill people, and then basically tortured them at the same time, and it, to the point where they were subservient. So.
Yeah. And I guess I was wondering, do you think Igonin will help convince other Cianchen to see the light the same as her? Kind of have these aha moments of, it's not what we were taught.
It'll be interesting to see. We don't know. We haven't met very many Cianchen, but they seem like a very...
Strict
and like lawful people. Like they've scared their people into
subservience,
submission, and into like believing that this is the way life is, and the ranking of classes is the way. It's a very classist society, it seems like.
Yeah. Okay, so Tom does make a comment to Amathera. I'm at your service, my lady. But now Amathera totally goes by the name Thera. To Tom's surprise.
You mistake me, good sir. I am only a poor refugee from the countryside, rescued by these good women.
So Elaine put the fear of God into Amathera.
It kind of sounds like it, doesn't it?
And I also thought Thera would be an okay baby name.
No. Yeah, it's a cute name.
Thera.
Yeah.
Okay, so they make it to the inn safely through the rioting, whatever. And it was the rioting the men had started with the rumors.
Yes,
of the
That
is a solid truth now to some people.
Yes.
Therefore, rioting. Okay, they're at the inn. Elaine assigns Thera to Rendra as extra help to work for food and stay for a few nights. And Rendra's like, well, damn it, but takes her without much complaint, right? It was like, oh, Rendra, you sweetheart.
Exactly. And then, like, Elaine here, or Nynaeve hears as she's... You know, taking Rendra to the servants' quarters, talking about how pretty she is.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
You know, like but classic Rendra, right?
We get this other perspective of what had happened. So Elaine later tells the group, Amathera is so clueless and so unaware of how bad the poverty is in the city. She saw no problem with her overflowing storerooms of food.
Yes, exactly.
Elaine had been pissed about that, apparently, and that must have been one of the disagreements.
Yeah. She's like, she has no idea what it's like to be a commoner.
Yeah.
She didn't even know about the soup kitchens that Baal Domin had opened up because she's so disconnected from the way the common folk live. Yeah. And so it'll be good for her to work for her supper for a couple of nights. It'll be good for her to experience... life is something less than a noble, right?
For a few nights, right? They're like, just 3 days. Yeah. Perhaps when the rioting will calm down enough, so.
Hopefully, it'll make her a better ruler.
Yes.
If she can actually experience firsthand what the common folks suffer day by day, hopefully it'll make her a better ruler. And I feel like we get from Elaine that her ambition in life is to be the best ruler she can possibly be, the best queen she can possibly be. She looks up to her mom. She considers her mom an extremely just and good queen, and that's what she wants to be, right? And so she is annoyed that there are rulers out there that don't have that same goal and ambition and are just ruling while being served on a silver plate, right? Okay.
That's a good point. Also makes me worried for her mom because I don't believe we're going to get another perspective of Morgaine.
Not in this book. No, so no.
I'm a little worried for her, but...
No, I mean, you should be. Morgaine, yeah.
Okay. Nynaeve ponders the mystery of Megiddon not chasing her, despite obvious exhaustion on Nynaeve's part, and certain that Leandrin did not suspect them, suspect Nynaeve or... Elaine, because then she would be on some sort of immediate hunt.
Yes.
So there's just a few ponderings, like little loose ends that we'll probably find out eventually. And I said, I'm not sure why, but I'm guessing we'll find out in a future book. But partly, Megiddon appears cunning to want to stay out of the spotlight. I'm not going to be there.
Well, and we got from Birgit, when Nynaeve had that conversation with Birgit, that Megiddon's, her M.O.,
Yep.
Is to stay in the shadows. I mean, she's known as the spider. So
yeah, I don't think she's linked up with Leandrin though. That's still my overall feeling.
Okay. We haven't seen that yet, have we? We haven't seen any type of connection between them.
It's the mystery of why didn't she just give Leandrin the thing to rule rant. You know,
the male dom. Yeah,
it was as much a mystery to the Black Aja, really. Yep. As it was. So anyway, okay. So Tom talks a bit about the Panarch Palace. Is probably just going to be burnt down. The Black Aja are going to be gone anyway, and he agrees. Yeah, Amathera can do a few days of service in the meantime, and he calls Elaine a fine queen someday. And Elaine absolutely loves this and begins to dab at Tom's bleeding eyebrow wound that happened during the ride.
Yeah.
It's just another sweet scene of...
Yeah.
People... This is an RJ chapter of the
time. Oh, so much. Ends. Yes. Yeah. He's...
Because this is our last perspective for all these...
From the girls.
Okay. Nynaeve reveals her findings onto the table. So, Bale... I love this. Bale Dolman pokes at the Quendalar disc, right? And he's just like... Oh, I had one of these once upon a time.
I did own a thing like this once.
And then he's just like, bullshit. Very much
doubted it. Yeah.
And
whatever.
Then, but readers but, remember, no, Eganine stole it from him.
And gave it to...
That dick.
Turok. Yeah, Lord Turok. And then...
It went to the Empress?
No.
It broke
no.
there.
Well, yeah, but it was recovered. It was recovered after the Battle of Faun. Oh, after Rand had killed... Turok. I mean, it was recovered with the horn and the dagger. Moraine, at that point, had gotten there and she recovered everything. That's when, but it was whole when they saw it. And then when Moraine recovered it, it had been broken.
Interesting.
So, huh.
So what is it that takes the breaking of
But Nynaeve, Nynaeve is not aware.
No.
Like, she knows about that seal.
We know.
But she's not aware that that seal was once the property of said Bale Dolman.
It's just good humor for readers.
Exactly.
They're like, Bale's telling the truth. Yep. Okay. So the chain and bracelet make everyone uncomfortable, and Eganine states, well, it's not a true Adam because those are made of silver. And this is made of Quendalar.
They're of a silvery metal and all of one piece. This is made of, like, a blacker, grayer metal. Oh, okay. And it is not of one piece. The two bracelets and the collar are separate. They're not connected by a chain the way Nadam is.
Oh, that's
and
even worse.
And Nynaeve...
Nynaeve is just like, but it's the same purpose.
Nynaeve pretty much just says, it is at least as much like an Adam as you and I are alike, Eganine. The woman looked startled, but after a moment she nodded. Not so different. Two women, each doing the best she could.
Oh,
it's sweet. It's a sweet moment. I enjoy that moment.
All right, so Julian suggests let's bring these items to the White Tower for safekeeping, and Nynaeve resolutely disagrees. Solid, no way, dumbass.
Yeah.
Good job, because they don't know the White Tower just had a civil war. Elaine attempts to use Sidar to destroy it, but has zero luck. Meaning the male Adam, probably, I thought this meant the male Adam was Quendalar. That's what I thought. Because, okay.
Yeah. Well, exactly, because Mogidin had said that it's impossible to destroy, yes.
So confirmation.
Yes.
Nynaeve asks Dolman if he's aware of any deep parts of the sea and requests him to throw it in. Nynaeve notices Eganine frowning, probably not wanting to part from her man crush, Dolman, right? Because Eganine's thinking, oh, once he's at sea. And then Nynaeve has this other thought. Well, Elaine's in love with a man destined to go crazy. And she's like, I'm going to have time to sort out my own feelings for Lan sooner or later. So it's the typical RJ throwing in a little bit of love stuff, you know what I mean?
Yes, and possible foreshadowing, yeah.
Yeah, end scene with Nynaeve suggesting they go check on Thera's progress as a servant and thinking soon to Tar Valon again. They don't know about Tar Valon's issues.
No, they don't. They don't know what's happened. And as far as we know, they're actually kind of happening as similar moments in time.
Yeah, which would make the most sense.
It kind of seems like everything that's happening in these last, like, 10 or so chapters...
Concurrent.
...is happening, because the next chapter we're going to cover next week for our next episode is going to be... But it's going to be, like, a different POV in a different part of the world. But I'm assuming... Similar time stamp.
That would make sense. It's like when they left. Was it they left Tear and Rand's storm?
Exactly. Yeah. His thrusting of the and we got everybody's POV centered around like the shaking of the stone.
So the end of this chapter, I was just like, I don't think it's a good idea to just throw it in the deep part. And I thought of Pirates of the Caribbean, like Some way, shape, or form, people are going to find
it. I mean, there's something about the ocean. Things get recovered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even... And, like, deep part of the ocean, I don't know.
One thing
I would feel better if I... As dangerous and as gross as it is, it's like a Horcrux from Harry Potter. I'd feel better knowing where it is.
So, we kind of skipped over... I mean, I know you stated it a little bit, but we kind of skipped over the fact that, like, Nynaeve vehemently does not want this to fall into the White Tower hands because this could control Rand. Exactly. And even with the best intentions. You know what I mean? Like if an Aes Sedai had this, it would be really hard for them to not be tempted to use it to control the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah.
Because the Dragon Reborn needs to be there for the last battle, right? Mm-hmm. And the Aes Sedai probably think that the best way to get him to the last battle is to...
Control him,
bring him under their wings, make sure that he does not do anything that they don't sanction, right? So Nynaeve is like, we've just got to get rid of this. And you're right. It would be better if we... It's kind of like if somebody dies off page and you don't see a body in a fantasy series, there's a good chance that they're coming back, right?
The Joker in Batman.
I mean, there's so many Gandalf. They're like... well, even though Gandalf died on screen, but you know what I mean? There's so many... Tom died off page, right? And we never saw his body. Right. And then he came back in a book.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's one of those things. Like, you can never...
But she also never watched Dexter. That was my other example. Did you watch Dexter?
Yes, I love Dexter.
And I don't
want
to spoil Dexter for people who never watched it, but let's just say the ocean can reveal its secrets.
It can. Very much so. I was kind of thinking a little bit more on the lines of, like, the Titanic, but yours is better.
People saw the Titanic, too, just saying.
Yeah, no, I know. And that's why I was thinking of it, so...
And I also feel like Aes Sedai, why they have the power of water, don't they? Why wouldn't they just raise it to the surface, but...
Well, they don't know it's there.
That's true.
But no, I get your point. Another thing that we didn't really talk about that before we end this chapter that I would like to just touch on is that Nynaeve and Elaine are resolving their...
Tiff?
Well, no. They succeeded in their goal.
Oh, they did, yeah.
They succeeded in retrieving what they needed to retrieve and rescuing Amythera. But it had a cost. And Nynaeve thinks about that when there's all the rioting going on.
Yeah.
And we see white cloaks being pulled off their horses.
Did you
which
say white cocks?
I said white clocks. But the white cocks might be the episode title now. I don't know. White cloaks being pulled off their horses, and don't get me wrong, I have no love for white cloaks. I'm not going to mourn a bloody white cloak.
But it's not necessarily a just reason
but
over
it's,
a made up.
They created a chaotic scene, right?
Yeah.
They created, why can't I think of what it's called? A mob, a riot.
Yeah.
And just so they could, so it's like, does the end really justify the means? Now we can argue that Tanchico was already boiling, and it wasn't going to take that much to set it off.
Hakim Karadin was his own fault. You know, to a certain degree, they had a corrupt leader, so when was it going to happen anyway?
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Yes, good on Nynaeve to think solemnly.
But she is very much aware of the destruction that they have left in their path by, you know, succeeding in their goal.
Yeah.
So,
good.
I think with that, we're to our...
Fuck, Mary Kill.
Fuck, Mary Kill!
Fuck, Mary Kill.
Fuck, Mary Kill!
I think I have mine. Unless you want... You can go first, because
I
can get more creative.
Once again, I have chosen multiple choices.
Because we're probably going to have similar... I stayed pretty in line.
Okay, I'm going to go.
Okay.
I am 100% fucking Jean, and she was such a badass in this.
Yes.
And I don't have to go over the reasons why. My second choice was Nynaeve. So even though I didn't have her in my marry section, I'm going to go ahead and marry Nynaeve.
Okay.
Because after this woman needs some good husbandly loving. Or wifely loving. I don't like... But after what Nynaeve succeeded in doing and facing off against Forsaken and actually succeeding in not getting destroyed.
Yeah.
Which she probably thought that would have... been what would happen if she ever faced off against Forsaken. She actually held her own and actually won out of cunningness and you know, using her intelligence and using her brains. So I am marrying Nynaeve, and I'm going to go ahead and, you know, I think I've got to, I don't necessarily want to, but I kind of think I've got to kill Amythera.
It's very tempting. Yes.
I understand why she does what she does, but it would have just been so much easier if she just listened to Elaine. Like, this woman just saved her, right? Like, just listen to her without, like, going off and trying to find, you know, start a rebellion right. You know, right away. So, anyways, those are mine.
Okay, and we were in line with the fucking Marys, but I can get creative. So, fuck, instead of Eganine,
And you should fuck Nynaeve because she was my second choice.
Well, she was going to be my Mary. I think I would fuck Nynaeve just because she had great moments. Even her being apologetic, it's like, well, that's actually attractive,
Nynaeve. Her humility. She finally shows some humility, and that's very attractive.
I think I'll marry my classic Bale Dolman.
Yeah.
He's providing all the sailors for guards. He was the one who knew about how to really get them in safely, he can pay people off. He still has his soup kitchens going through all of this. He's a thief, but you know, well, smuggler.
He's what's the classic trope, the thief with the big heart, right? Yeah.
And then kill
Robin Hood type style.
Keep it straightforward, the mean cook.
She was also on my list.
She was unpleasant.
She was on my list.
So,
I chose not to kill her because
Amythera was up there.
I understood why she got angry at Elaine's curtsy, because Elaine was thinking that she would curtsy to the cook, the way servants curtsy to her. Without realizing, servants aren't going to curtsy to a cook the way they curtsy to the daughter fucking heir of Andor, right? So that's why I chose not to kill the mean cook. Marilyn Gamalthan was also an option, but that's why I went with
Gene
Kay. Right, exactly. Like, and any episode we do that has a Black Aja in it, they should be the ones that we want to kill, right? So anyways.
Until next time.
Yeah.
Be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Glee Man's Apprentice.
The Glee Man's Apprentice is available on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public.
Our theme song is written by Twitch Avery and performed by Andrel, Bard of Time.